Hi, my name is Michelle Nishan, and I'm a chef and restaurant owner and a partner of Food & Wine's Chefs Make Change. You can learn more about the great things myself and other chefs are doing on foodandwine.com.
You're listening to iWine Radio. My name is Lynn Creelo-Chamberlain, host. The February 2012 issue of Food & Wine magazine, which you already have in your hot little hands, is featuring Chefs Make Change, which is a coalition of 10 superstar chefs. The aim is to raise $1 million for the various chefs' charities. And this amount of $1 million represents all the subscribers to Food & Wine magazine. The campaign is supported by a significant social media presence, of which listeners for Wine & Dine will be able to participate. And we will give you that information during our chat here today with Chef Michelle Nishan. And I'm just tickled pink, quite frankly, because I've seen him for several years on Victory Garden. And so you will recognize his voice immediately. Chef Michelle Nishan is the owner of a homegrown restaurant called Dressing Room in Westport, Connecticut. And he is also the CEO, president, and founder of a nonprofit called Wholesome Wave online at wholesomewave.org. And we're going to talk all about that. And, of course, weave in some comments about wine. Michelle, thank you so very much for joining us today on Wine & Dine. It's such a pleasure meeting you.
Well, it's really my pleasure to be here, Lynn. Really terrific, honored, and have been looking forward.
Let's start, if you wouldn't mind, please, by giving listeners a little bit of your background history, because it's quite fascinating and it might be inspiring to some people who start from perhaps some humble background and definitely an agricultural background. And early on, you realized that Americans were not eating well. They were eating from a can, which kind of catapulted you into this passion for people eating local and fresh, and especially vegetables.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I really felt when I was younger that I was going to be a musician. That's the way I wanted to do things. And my mother and father both came from family farm. And many generations of family farm history, my dad from Kentucky, my mom from Missouri. So I used to work summers in Missouri on my grandfather's farm until he passed away when I was 16. And I just thought that way of life was pretty normal. I was raised in a suburb of Chicago, but spent my summers down there. So I thought, yeah, there's Chicago, which is kind of a big city in the suburbs, but then maybe the rest of the country looked like Morley, Missouri, only to discover that that wasn't the case. While I was pursuing a potential career as a musician, I learned all about how musicians can be classified as starving musicians. And when my mom noticed that I was losing weight, she convinced me that I should get a job in a restaurant so at least I would eat.
Yes.
One thing led to another because thankfully my mother was both a musician, a beautiful, beautiful singer, but also an amazing cook who could dispatch a hog with her bare hands and cure her own bacon and cure her own hams and stuff like that. She was a real farm girl. And I kind of took for granted that I could do things like fried chicken expertly by age 12. I also took for granted how that could be a really great benefit in getting a job in a restaurant. So, you know, I moved through the ranks in restaurants pretty quickly, and one thing led to another, and food became my career. I saw tremendous creative similarities between music and being in a band and being in a restaurant.
The way you need to
collaborate with band members to have a really great product for your audience is the same way you need to collaborate with kitchen members to do the same thing. So it was a real natural transition for me. But the interesting thing was that when I first started working in restaurants, I assumed that restaurants would be buying from farmers. I saw all the canned food coming in the back door, and being young and competitive, I just decided, wow, one day when I become a chef, I'll just buy from farmers and then my food will be better than anyone else's. When I did become a chef in 1981 in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, at a restaurant called the Fleur de Lis, and went out to try to find farmers, I discovered that there weren't any, and it was something that was really humbling for me, that the way of life I was raised with as a child was a very, very special, unique, and rare circumstance. Hmm. And it was from that point forward that I decided I needed to figure out a way to change that if I could.
Can I ask you, what was your position in a band as musician? Were you the lead singer, or did you play an instrument, or both?
I was a little bit of a lead singer. There are a few songs that I composed that I sang, and a couple of covers that we did, because I was a huge fan of Lou Reed, that I sang, but I was a bass player.
Oh, wow.
I play other things, but bass was my instrument of trade, so to speak.
Wow.
Yeah, very cool.
So here we are, what, 30 years, no, more than 30 years, 30 years later here,
19, years.
And it's been quite a ride getting to this position, and I'm dying to know, how the heck did you make that connection? I was a regular watcher of Victory Garden, and then all of a sudden you were on Victory Garden. It was, and I don't remember who was doing it before, but the Australian guy and you, how did that come about?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Lynn, because, you know, from the minute I became a chef, I was determined to figure out a way to make the local food thing happen. And as we both know, 30 years ago, it wasn't even on the radar. In fact, 10 years ago, it still wasn't popular, really. Even you know, with the amazing efforts of Chefs Collaborative and other groups, it still really didn't start hitting the radar until the consumer base at large started seeing the value in local. So my career has always been dedicated to that. About halfway through it, my son Chris was diagnosed with diabetes, and I really started understanding 17 years ago the direct correlation, not only between, you know, food and human health and societal health on the side of what had happened to America's small farmers, which I see as the ultimate small business, by the way.
Yes.
But the impact of the food that we consume on people's individual health. So as I moved through there, I did very, very, pardon the expression, ballsy things like opened Heartbeat Restaurant with Drew Neaporn back in 97 in the W Hotel, which was a restaurant of well-being based on local, organic, sustainable, buying at farmers markets, really speaking out on behalf of trying to find business opportunities for immigrant and refugee growers who were growing really great things. So it was all about farming and gardening. That was my background. And then Sissy Biggers, who was a TV Food Network personality, was a lifestyle guest on Victory Garden, and she was bringing guest chefs into Victory Garden to make direct connections between their food segments. And she said, oh, you guys need to bring on Michelle. He's a riot. We'll have a blast.
I remember her.
She's fabulous. So I did a couple of segments with her, and they went so well that they invited me to become their permanent food correspondent. And then the last year to actually have a whole segment where that Victory Garden was in my backyard. I have an organic garden in my backyard. And one of those segments won a James Beard Award, so I was very proud of that.
Has there ever been any discussion on Victory Garden about including wine or on a more regular basis as part of the Victory Garden theme and the culinary theme of, you know, having, not necessarily teaching, how this wine smells and that sort of thing, and not even that it goes with this particular dish, but just talking about wine as an agricultural product and having special guests on.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Lynn, because we're having discussions about revisiting Victory Garden this year, and I think it's a very relevant discussion. I think not only, you know, from a pairing perspective, but also the fact that some of the great vineyards of today, the winemakers, are really into sustainable and biodynamic practices.
Very much so.
And allowing the vines and the terroir of the region where the vines are being grown to really allow the wine to express itself. So when we look at, I think those synergies are there. We haven't had those discussions yet, but thanks for the idea.
I think you'd have a real, people would be very interested in that.
I'm a huge lover of wine.
What's your favorite wine? Or do you have a favorite variety or region of wine?
Oh, my goodness, I have so many. I love them all. You know, Austria, Yugoslavia, America, all over the place. But, you know, here, you know, I love what the Benziger family is doing.
Okay.
I love what Lalonis has done. One of my all-time favorite wines from the U.S. is, you know, Calera Central Coast Pinot Noir. I love so many wines. I really, you know, one of my favorite wine pairings is the right dry Riesling with mushrooms is one of the most amazing things that you can ever have, especially if there's a little cheese in there. I love wine.
When you said your first thing out your mouth was Austria, were you thinking like Grüner Veltliner Austria, or were you thinking like a red Austrian wine?
The answer is yes.
Okay, now.
All of the above, they're all fabulous. The reds are particularly striking because so few people know about it, so I'm glad you brought that up. You know, they're so worth exploring, you know, because they're so unique. And they're so good for food. They're just great for food pairing.
We're about to go to commercial break, because I have a question I don't want to ask you right now because we'll end up having to break in the middle. But so let me ask you, as we're going out to this out of this segment, why did your parents name you Michelle? Is the family background French?
The family background is Prussian. You're Alsace.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that's very good. Okay, because I've always wondered that. Okay, Michelle, Nishan, we're going to go to a short break here. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. And we're going to find out about his wine list at the dressing room and give you all sorts of information about Chefs Make Change online. You're listening to Wine and Dine.
Hi, I'm Dana Cowan, Editor-in-Chief of Food & Wine Magazine. We keep you up to date on the latest tastes in the world of food and drink. You can find out more about Food & Wine Magazine at foodandwine.com. Now keep listening to Lynn on Wine and Dine.
Hi, this is Christina Gertovich. I'm the Associate Publisher of Food & Wine Magazine. We encourage you to pick up a copy at your local newsstand or log on to foodandwine.com and subscribe to the magazine. And, of course, keep listening to Lynn on Wine and Dine.
Okay, you'll have to mark your calendar. Okay, the Chefs Make Change campaign will be online on February 15th. Several of the chefs will participate in a Kitchen Insider Chats on Facebook. And then on February 1st, from 3 to 4 p.m. East Coast time, there will be a Twitter party with chefs and Dana Cowan, who is the managing editor of Food & Wine Magazine. And you can use the hashtag ChefsMakeChange. So let's ask Michelle Nishan, who we're continuing our conversation with and who's part of this campaign. Are you going to be one of the chefs either on February 1st or the 15th that is participating in the Twitter and or Facebook?
Absolutely, de toi. Yes, I absolutely. I will be on the 1st.
Okay, February 1st. Okay, cool.
Yep.
And so you speak French as well?
You know, it's funny. I speak a little bit of French. My family on my father's side is fifth generational. They settled in the Kentucky territories in the late 1700s. And, you know, so we didn't really keep the language. I made an effort as I was growing up to learn French the best that I could. I also wanted to learn Wallonian French, because I know we have some relatives over near Belgium. I know I have some. There are some Nishans that made it down as far as Hungary.
Oh, wow.
during the time of the whole Prussian Empire thing. I guess there's a family member of mine, a cousin out in Virginia, that's been extensively tracing the family tree. So I've been trying to find the time to really brush up on that stuff. But I recently just went to Paris. I'm an Ashoka Fellow, and I went there to look at synergies between the work that we do at Wholesome Wave, doubling the value of federal assistance like food stamps for people at the poverty level if they buy locally grown fruits and vegetables from farmers at farmers markets. And many of the Ashoka Fellows I've been lining up with are from France. So just that much more motivation to get better at it.
The Wholesome Wave, it's not a national thing, is it? Or is it?
Oh, absolutely. We're now in almost 30 states. And that actually is with great thanks to Food and Wine Magazine. You know, Dana Cowan and Chris Gertovich back a few years back approached us and asked us about Wholesome Wave because they have a cause marketing campaign called Grow for Good, where a small percentage of the ticket proceeds from the Aspen Classic come to a food organization that's working specifically on farm-to-table issues. So this has been a belief of Dana's, a belief of Chris for some time. They really wanted to move in this direction. And while it's a small percentage of the proceeds, 5,000 people show up at that classic every year. And it's been a huge catalyst for us to be able to grow from a few states to almost 30 states now. So it's been terrific. And the synergies, obviously, between what we're doing for our constituents, folks that we serve, and the nonprofits that we support with seed funding in these various states is actually making really good quality food available for people regardless of their income. So it's been a real privilege to have Food and Wine support not only through Chefs Make Change, but also through the Grow for Good campaign. So hats off to Food and Wine for being so forward-thinking and really wanting to contribute to see that everybody has an opportunity to have the kind of culinary experiences that we're discussing on your show today.
Is North Carolina one of those 30 states?
Not yet.
I would, because... Our farmers market, oh gosh, I would love, if there's any way that, I'd love to hear about that in North Carolina, because we have a lot of farmers market activity going on in North Carolina, including where I live in New Bern. Oh, that would be so glorious. And I see that Nell Newman is chair. I've interviewed Nell Newman a couple times, although it's been years ago, with her books. Share a little bit of the story of how you you ran into her father and struck up a friendship that kind of led to this as well.
Well, you know, it's all Nell's fault. Nell and I, you know, ran parallel lives in the organic sustainable movement, you know, for quite some time. And back around 2004, Nell reached out to me because her dad had decided that he wanted to open a restaurant. And she said, "Michelle, I need you to do me two favors, either talk him out of it or help him with it." And I had actually left the restaurant business to pursue more larger scale sustainable change in two areas. One, I felt that if we didn't address the plight of our nation's underserved communities, and right now there are 44 million Americans living at or below the poverty level, if we didn't address that population, and if we also didn't try to reach out to larger companies to help them make more sustainable change, that the local organic sustainable movement would remain a boutique movement. So I had left. So I told Nell, you know, I'm out of the business. I love my life. I don't want to do the restaurant with your dad, but I'd be thrilled to advise him to make sure whatever operator he chooses follows the family values. Well, a year and a half and three operators later.
Oh, wow.
Paul looked me in the eye one day and said, "Would you just open this damn restaurant with me?" And the rest is history. We opened Dressing Room together in October of 2006. And I do always try to use the opportunity when we're mentioning Paul to tell everybody that he was more wonderful than anybody could ever have imagined. And just a remarkable, remarkable human being. And, you know, I love Nell so much. You know, we've been friends for some time, but I don't believe I've ever thanked her properly for introducing me to her dad. It was a remarkable experience, and I just have to tell you, the Newman family, Joanne Woodward, they are all cut from such incredible cloth. Joanne often doesn't get the credit that Paul does because she's so much more subdued, but she is a real driver in our movement, the environmental movement. The family is one of the highest quality families you could ever know from a human perspective. They really put themselves, their heart, their soul, their money, their resources, and their leverage to very, very good use. Remarkable people.
Michelle, with the beverage program at Dressing Room in Westport, Connecticut, do you kind of follow a theme of organics and or biodynamics or a bigger umbrella of sustainability with respect to wine, beer, even spirits?
Yeah, absolutely. What we do is, you know, it's tough. If we did all organic, sustainable, biodynamic, we'd be leaving some categories out from the perspective of overall wine lovers. We also believe the fact that our list is mostly either sustainable, organic, or biodynamic. And what we do is we designate that on the list with an S, an O, or a B.
Okay.
And if it doesn't have a mark, our customers have come to learn that it's none of the above or below.
Okay.
But it also, I see more and more producers now trying to move in that direction, whether it's by, going to wind power or solar power in some of their vineyards, which we say, not good enough to get a S. let's look at some of your soil, man. But, it's interesting because more and more vineyards are coming online. They see the value. And what I love about a lot of the organic, the sustainable, and the biodynamic vineyards, and again, I go back to the Benziger family, because they are very transparent about allowing anybody on their land and sharing their practice with anybody, and they're really a great example of someone who's gone beyond. There's a real openness there. So what a lot of these conventional producers are learning is that the outcomes are much more unique and dynamic wine. You really are allowing the terroir to express itself. So it really comes into more of a conversation of, what are the vines you're picking for your land? What are the practices that you're using for the region that you're in? And that should really dictate. And the quality is always going to show up in the finished product.
I couldn't agree more. Boy, I'm telling you, I could just talk to you for hours. I'm so tickled pink to have had this excuse to make your acquaintance. And if you would like to actually join Chef Michel Nichon on February 1st, you're going to want to write down hashtag Chefs Make Change. And this is all to benefit Chefs Make Change Coalition. You're listening to Wine and Dine.
iWine Radio is a production of Food Tastes Better with Wine on the web at iWineRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Michel Nichon. I'm chef owner of Dressing Room Restaurant and CEO of Wholesome Wave, an organization that is providing great food locally grown for all Americans, regardless of income. You can learn more about Wholesome Wave on foodandwine.com and their Chefs Make Change initiative, or on wholesomewave.org.
Hi, my name is Chris Benziger of the Benziger Family Winery. Visit our authentic wines.
Hi, I'm Kathy Benziger from Benziger Family Winery. Come visit us at benziger.com.